face out. Two ducks in my spyglass, furry as a mouse. It's a suey nature, a suey nature thing. It's a suey nature, a suey nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. You've tuned in to episode 4 of Fleecewise, the series. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. Show notes and photographs of things I talk about are found on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. Today is Sunday, October 9th, 2016. Thank you for tuning in to episode 4 of Fleecewise, and welcome to new listeners who may be coming from other podcasts like New Hampshire Knits, Fiber Trek, or Fiber Town. I'm delivering the 4th episode in this series, and it concerns what to do with that fleece when you get it home. So maybe you have purchased a fleece. Maybe you purchased one a while ago and it's been languishing somewhat because you're not sure what to do with it. Maybe someone said, oh, you're a knitter? I can give you a fleece. My cousin has sheep. My neighbor has sheep. And then you end up with a fleece and you're not sure what to do with it. I hope to give some practical tips and information, some of my own experience, and then a little bit of my personal story regarding this journey. So, you have a fleece. In my estimation, you have 3 options. I spent a lot of time thinking about this and thinking about how to organize this episode. And I think once you're in possession of a fleece, you have 3 options. You can store it, you can spin it, or you can scour it. Those are your immediate 3 choices. So I'll be talking about them in this order. And if you have additional questions, or if you'd like to share some of your own wisdom, I hope you will take the opportunity to check out the discussion threads on each of our podcast boards on Ravelry, because there's some great conversation going on over there. And we anticipate that this will be part 1 of a series, and we hope to deliver part 2 with even more information and tips and responses to your queries, because we plan to purchase a fleece together, divide it, and then share more news and a deeper story with you once we return from Rhinebeck. All right, so store, spin, or scour. The first of these options is the most likely, that you will want to store a fleece for later use. And it's important to remember some of the principles of fiber. One is that wool trades moisture with the air around it. That is a quote from Beth Smith in her book, The Spinner's Book of Fleece, which is an excellent resource for fleece purchasing and for processing and spinning fleece. Since wool trades moisture with the air around it, it's best to put it in a container or to store it in a way that allows it to breathe. The method I recommend is one I learned at Fibercraft Studios, where there are many, many fleeces in storage. These are unwashed fleeces because part of the task of students at the Fibercraft Studio is to learn how to process and spin their own wool. And a great way to store a fleece is to put the fleece into a fitted sheet. The elastic at the edges of the sheet help to contain the fleece and contain any vegetable matter that might be coming out from getting all over your rug or your carpet. And then you can fold that sheet into thirds and roll it up and store it inside a very large pillowcase. Of course, you can buy flat sheets and outfit them this way, or you could even just pin the corners together so that they contain a fleece nicely. In the Fiber Trek episode, we saw the way a fleece was laid out so that it vaguely represented the shape of the animal, and then it was folded into thirds and rolled. So this will also allow you to see the parts of the fleece when you open up that sheet, and so you know what part of the fleece you're taking when you take some to scour or to spin. It's important to remember that not all fleeces hold their shape in that beautiful way you saw on the Fiber Trek episode. Sometimes fleeces don't stay together that well, depending on the age of the animal and the type of fiber. And so that fitted sheet can become very important in those situations, because if you have a fleece that's likely to start separating very quickly, the fitted sheet is a way to keep it together. Of course, a high thread count cotton and natural fiber sheets are going to be best, but if you just find some sheets at your local thrift store, or if you use something that's wearing out from your home, that's a great reuse for your fitted sheets and pillowcases. In general, the enemies of fleece, like moths and carpet beetles, are attracted to dark places, and so keeping your fleece stored off of any carpet or rug and in a place with light and fresh air is going to be the best way to store it. And if you haven't looked at or worked with your fleece in a while, it can be a good idea to take it outside on a clear sunny day and just let it air out, let it get some sunlight, and then restore it for another period of time. It's also important not to compact your fleece. There can be a great temptation, I know I'm tempted with my fleece and fiber, to compact it to make it take up less space, because I am very space challenged at Yinhu, and so I like to put things into the smallest space possible. But that's not really a good idea with fleece or fiber, because over time, that compacting makes the fibers kind of reattach themselves, and then you can create a situation where you can't loosen them up, and then, you know, it becomes very difficult to work with that fleece or fiber. Beth Smith says that once you have your fleece in this more breathable situation in fabric, you can also store that in paper, in a dry cleaner bag, in other situations where it's not completely airtight. Well, all of that information is well and good, but what if you purchased your fleece some time ago and it's still stored in that plastic bag in which you purchased it? Is all lost? Should you just pitch it and move on? No, absolutely not. I have toured several different fiber mills, and the fleece that I saw stored there waiting for processing, do you know what it was in? It was in plastic bags. And it wasn't just brought there a week before. Sometimes mills have a processing date that's 6, 9, maybe even 12 months in advance of when it's brought to the mill. So the fact that you may have a fleece that's stored in a plastic bag doesn't mean that it's unusable. So it can be a good idea to take it out, unroll it in a sheet, assess what you have, and then store it for later use. One thing I've learned from watching Judith McKenzie's series, it's a DVD series called Three Bags Full, is that fleece is a lot more resilient and a lot less delicate than I initially thought. Yes, it's possible to ruin a fleece by poor storage or processing decisions. It is. But there are many, many effective ways to do it. So the more you know, the more effective your decision-making can be, and that's one reason to take in as much information and as many opinions as you can so that you can make a good choice about how to store, how to scour, how to spin your fleece. A second option, once you are in possession of a fleece, is to spin it. And you may be thinking, wait a minute, spin it before I clean it? Well, yes, that is an option. When the four of us podcasters talk together before this FleeceWise series began, we each mentioned things that were important for us to share over the four episodes. And Sarah of Fiber Trek specifically mentioned spinning in the grease. And this is the way I started to spin, both in my spinning class at the Spinnery in Frenchtown, New Jersey, and at Fibercraft Studio. One way to work with your fleece is to pluck some locks directly from the fleece, hand card them, meaning open up the tips, and then gently work that fiber into itself. So it's almost like you are doing the motions of a set of hand cards with your own hands. And then you can begin to draft that fleece out into a bit of roving of your own design. And then you can use a spindle to spin it. You can use a wheel to spin it. At Fibercraft Studio, we put some fabric over our laps. We took a handful of fleece. We had a very primitive spindle that was made out of a stick and a stone tied together. And we began this very tactile experience of working with fleece and understanding the properties of that fiber. This method can be particularly pleasurable if you have quite a clean fleece. And the idea is that you're spinning in the grease and then you're washing this fleece after it's plied and before any dyeing process. It is essential for the lanolin to be removed from the fiber or the yarn before dyeing because it will prevent dyes from biting into the fiber. Some spinners report that spinning in the grease is easier on their hands, especially for folks who have arthritic conditions. And it is a way to really intensify your experience with the fiber. I don't think it's the most likely of the scenarios, but it's certainly one that I wanted to mention. A third option when you're in possession of a fleece is to scour it. And as a footnote to scouring, I'd like to mention sampling. Sampling means to select a small portion of a fleece and to practice or to try out a scouring method on just that small portion before you start working with the entire fleece. This will allow you to assess how much cleaning that fleece really needs before it's in a condition for you to work with it. You can use this same notion of sampling for sampling cleaned fleece with some spinning techniques, before you commit yourself to spinning an entire fleece or a portion of the fleece in the same way, you can try out little bits to see what's really working best for the fibers that you have. To sample scour, you should select a small portion of your fleece, and how small might depend on what the weight of your fleece really is. If you have a very small, low-weight lamb's fleece, you may only want to take a quarter of an ounce or a half of an ounce. And you want to make sure that you're not necessarily sampling from the choicest part of the fleece. Swamp Hens 2 asked a question on one of the FleeceWise threads about what is the portion of the fleece to use, or what's the best portion. The choicest fiber from a fleece comes from the region called the shoulders. And I will post a diagram of a fleece so that you can see where the different regions are. That's one of the benefits of having your fleece stored in a way that lets you reacquaint yourself with it, that you can see where the neck end is, that you can see where the rump and the legs are, because each of those areas of fiber on a fleece can have different properties. A hand spinner's fleece may be prized because of its overall consistency throughout, but even then, there can be some difference between the quality in different parts of a fleece. So if you're sampling, you probably don't want to just reach in and take your ounce or half ounce out of the shoulder region, because that's some of your choicest fleece. So you want to sample like a cross section or sort of a mid-grade range, depending on the fleece you have. What I'm going to share with you now is my method for sampling a half ounce to an ounce of fiber. This is something I've developed over time after doing quite a bit of fleece processing and quite a bit of scouring of different types and different breeds of animals. But I guess my teacher in this method would have to be the first person who really told me anything about fleece processing, and that is Sadie. She's known as Sadie Ruin on Ravelry, and she has the Yarnivore podcast. And she was my teacher at the Super Summer Knit Together, the one and only time I was able to attend, and I took a class that she offered called Fleece Processing 101. Sadie was an incredibly articulate and patient teacher. She took us through the whole range of things we needed to know about processing a fleece. And then this went back into the purchase of a fleece, what might be some beginner fleeces. She gave us an extraordinary handout. She told us a lot of stories about her own experience. And she's the one who really made me feel unafraid about this process. The fleece that she had for us to work with was a Jacob fleece, and that is very interesting because later when I went to Fibercraft Studio, I have been working primarily, not exclusively, but primarily with Jacob fleece. And Sadie talked about using lingerie bags to sample a fleece. She processes her entire fleece this way, and you can get larger kind of sweater bags for a bigger quantity. But I have a whole bunch of small lingerie bags, and here's what I do. I take between a half ounce and 1 ounce of fiber, and I weigh that fiber before and then after processing. This is an important technique because you can lose anywhere from 30 to 60% of your weight during the processing. And if you are concerned about having enough fiber for the project you have in mind, you need to know how much loss you're experiencing. So vegetable matter and the lanolin, they weigh down a fleece considerably. And then there's any loss of fiber if you're pulling out second cuts, if tips might be breaking as you're processing, if you're combing the fiber as your technique, you could have a lot of loss through all of those processes. So you want to have an accurate understanding of how much clean and ready to use fiber you're getting from your initial fleece. So I sit down with a cloth in my lap. On my left side, I have a basket with my unwashed fiber. And then on my right, I usually have the table with one of those lingerie bags sitting open on the table. I pull out a lock of unscoured fiber, and then by hand, I open up the tips over the cloth in my lap. This allows any debris, vegetable matter, to fall out on my lap, and it also opens up those tips so that when I wash the fleece, as much dirt and oil comes out as possible. We saw in some of the video episodes of FleeceWise the difference between the cut side of the fleece, where that's coming off of the animal, and then the tips, which are exposed to the elements. By far, the tips of the fleece are much dirtier than the cut side near the animal, because that animal has swint and it's kind of cleaning the fleece closest to the skin most effectively. So in order to get the most oils and debris out of the fiber, I'm opening up the tips. I'm trying to preserve the lock formation as much as possible, and then I'm making rows of those locks inside the lingerie bag that I have sitting on the table. So I'm just lining them up. Usually I can get 3 or 4 rows of locks depending on the staple length of the fiber. Once I have that lingerie bag full of the fiber I want to sample, I take it to my kitchen. I have 3 dish basins that I use exclusively for fiber processing. And over time, my method for washing the fleece has changed a little bit, and I'll explain why as I go through the steps. The first bath that my fiber gets is in very, very hot water. It should be 150 to even 180 degrees. There are 2 reasons for this high heat. First of all, the water needs to be hot enough so that the grease releases from the fiber. Second of all, the water needs to be hot enough so that over the course of 20 minutes, that water temperature doesn't cool in such a way that lanolin reattaches itself to the fiber. Because you can get out all the lanolin you want, but then if the water cools, it's going to reattach itself. So that high, high heat is really important. My tap water is not high enough to reach these temperatures. So I boil or simmer some water on the stove, and then I use my tap water to cool that off if it's way too hot. And my first soak is the hot water only. Lots of folks recommend putting some soap in that water on the first round, but over time I have decided not to do that. One of the reasons is that sometimes my fleece may be clean enough so that I don't need to use soap on it. The hot water alone is enough to get it into a state that's comfortable for me to card it and spin it. The second reason is that if I use hot water only and I let that fiber in its lingerie bag gradually take up water, I don't agitate it. I just push it with a back of a wooden spoon. I just push that lingerie bag gently down to the bottom. I cover the dish basin with a piece of tin foil or a towel to keep the heat in, and I let it sit for 20 minutes. After 20 minutes, I remove the lingerie bag and I put it into the next basin. That original basin of water with no soap in it, I can allow to cool, and then I can put that on my compost pile, which I'm reluctant to do with soapy water. And like I said, sometimes that bath alone and then maybe a rinse is enough for me to have a clean fleece that's comfortable for me to work with. If I'm going to use some soap in this process, that would be in basin number two. So I remove the lingerie bag from the first basin and I put it into the second basin. Prior to putting it in, I have filled that basin with very hot water, and then I've stirred in just a little bit of Dawn dish detergent. There are many scouring products. There are lots of different things on the market. I find that Dawn works great against the grease in fiber, and it's easy to purchase in my supermarket, and I always have some on hand. Sadie taught me to drizzle the dish detergent over a basin that's filled with water and then gently stir it in. She said, bubbles are your enemy. You don't want suds in this basin. You just want it very still and no suds. Again, I let that lingerie bag sink gently to the bottom. I push it with the back of a wooden spoon if I need to. Again, I cover that basin of very, very hot water with a piece of tin foil to keep it hot, and then I let that sit for about 20 minutes. And then my final bath would be a rinse bath. All three of these baths should be as consistent in temperature as possible. They may be gradually cooler because if you think about it, if you put your lingerie bag first into a basin of 150 degrees, it will have cooled just a little bit so that your second basin could be slightly less hot, and then your third basin could be a little bit less hot than that. I like to put my hands into the two basins at once and make sure that the second basin I'm about to put my fiber into is approximately the same temperature as the one from which I just removed it. After that final basin or the rinse, I remove the lingerie bag and I press water out of it without agitating. And then often I just let that lingerie bag dry. A great system for drying is to use old window screens, and I open them up over my clothing rack so that there's a nice ventilation, and I just put a towel under my clothing rack to catch any drips. Outside is a great place for the fiber to dry. Inside during the winter near a heat source is a great way to go when in colder weather. Sometimes if I want to keep sampling, I would like to remove that fiber from the lingerie bag. So I just do that very carefully and I remove those individual locks, set them out on a screen, and let them dry. So there you have my method for sampling a fleece. There are some other considerations that you may make, which could lead you to use a system other than the one I've described. Certainly, I've worked with very dirty fleeces, notably some alpaca fiber that I received was incredibly dusty and dirty. There was no lanolin, though, so I didn't want to use a ton of soap to dry out the fibers, but I needed to take that fleece through, I think, 7 or 8 washes before the water wasn't dirty anymore. And then even after I processed the yarn that I was making, I blended some alpaca with some Jacob fleece. When I washed that plied yarn, even more dirt came out of the yarn. So depending on the level of cleanliness in your fleece, depending on the delicacy or the sturdiness of the fibers that you're using, that could be an indication of what steps you want to take to scour your fleece. In her DVD series, 3 Bags Full, Judith McKenzie demonstrated what I thought were some very outlandish methods for removing water from a fleece after it's been washed. And I've come to learn that these aren't so unusual after all. One, she uses a salad spinner to remove water. And another thing she recommends is to use the spin cycle of a washing machine, not the rinse, but just a top-loading washing machine can use that centrifugal force to get as much water out of the fiber as possible. And that makes for much quicker drying. Drying time is a consideration. In dry climates or high elevations, fiber may dry very quickly. But if you live in an area with high humidity, or you're trying to process fiber during a damp or rainy season, it can take a really long time to dry. And it is important to get it completely dry before you store it, and certainly before you weigh it. Because if you are trying to figure out how much fiber you have available for your project, then it's important to get an accurate weight measurement. Another technique for scouring or cleaning fiber is a fermentation method. I mentioned swint, which is the process by which a sheep cleanses its own fiber. Usually this self-cleaning process is concerned mostly with the area directly around the sheep, so maybe the first 1/2 inch to 2 inches of the staple length will be much cleaner than the outside, and that's to keep a sheep clean and healthy. But you can activate that swint so that it cleans an entire fleece if you use a fermentation method. I've never done it, but it fascinates me, and it could be something that I try in the future. It involves putting the entire fleece into a vessel of water and letting time and its own heat kind of activate and ferment so that you can pour off all of the dirt and the lanolin, and you're left with a clean fleece. This is a very smelly process, I've been told, and something that's only done out of doors, but it would be great to try, or maybe even better, just to witness someone else doing it and to hear their story. In A Spinner's Book of Fleece, Beth Smith recommends buying the best tools you can afford to do any kind of fleece processing or spinning. She says that although you can use substandard tools that you can get at a very low price, they're not going to give you the quality of an experience that you can get with better tools. And I think this is a good tip, although I think there's also a case to be made for, you know, knitter know thyself. If you are truly a beginner and you're not sure about your level of commitment to fleece processing, you may want to start with some techniques that are relatively affordable, or you can borrow tools and things you need from someone else so that you're not making a financial investment as you figure this out. And you may be thinking, but I just like knitting. Why should I go through all this trouble? Why can't I just buy the yarn and enjoy that? All true. But If you're listening, if you are still listening to this episode, I venture to say it may be the case that you are at least curious to find out what fleece processing is all about. And certainly, it will enhance your understanding of your craft to give fleece processing a try. It's kind of along the lines of learning how to use all of the equipment in a dark room, even if you're going to use a digital camera. You have a deeper understanding, a deeper connection with the tools and materials you're working with, and that can lead you to a more satisfying product in the end. So I venture to say that even working with a small amount of fleece and processing it can lead you to making better decisions about yarn purchases. It can help you make more effective substitutions if you're looking at a pattern and you're planning to substitute the yarn that's recommended. You can overall just have a bit more wisdom about your practice and your process. And I'll argue that even working a little bit with fleece and understanding it can help you get a handle on gauge, tension, swatching, blocking, and fit with greater accuracy than you had before. I'll be shopping for a fleece at Rhinebeck, and I will have a digital copy of the Field Guide to Fleece readily available for consultation. Because I will be shopping in conjunction with three other people, they may have some suggestions about fleeces that I'm not familiar with the breed or I don't know the characteristics. And who knows what Claire and Sarah and Emily may be attracted to when we enter the fleece sale. So I think having that Field Guide to Fleece as my companion will help me be more comfortable considering a range of options for that fleece purchase. My own experience has been a great deal with Jacob Sheep, and I would like to close this episode of Fleece Wise with a little bit of an overview of the Jacob Sheep and why I think its fleece is a great choice for beginners. First of all, Jacob Sheep fleeces are relatively small. They range from about 3 to 6 pounds, and that's a nice, manageable weight for a beginner. They also have a lot of varying characteristics within a single fleece. So you may have noticed Jacob Sheep because they're adorable. They're kind of the cutest of sheep because they're spotted. They're usually mostly white, maybe 60% with about 40% spots or markings. These can range from a very, very deep brown to almost a lilac gray color. And those color differences in the fleece are due to different pigmentation on the skin of a sheep. And so the differences between the colors of the fiber can also mean differences in texture, in staple length. It can almost seem like the fiber came from a couple of different sheep, when in fact it's just one fleece. All of this means that you can use one fleece to try a lot of different processes or even some different spinning projects. You can also get some great gradients by separating out the colors of the fleece and then keeping them separate or blending them to a certain degree to get different effects. So it can be really exciting to work with a Jacob fleece. Sometimes there can be kemp in the fleece. American Jacob sheep are unimproved. In the UK, there was a time when Jacob sheep were bred for larger body weight and they were used as a meat sheep. But here in the United States, they haven't undergone that process. And so they tend to be relatively small and their fleeces unimproved. So you get that irregularity in the fleece. They are a conservation breed and they are not jacketed because Jacobs have horns. If they aren't able to get their own jackets off, they can help their friends get their jackets off. So sometimes that can be seen as an undesirable thing because often a beginning spinner will want a fleece that has been coated. But as we've seen in previous episodes of this FleeceWise series, that's not necessarily better to get a coated fleece. Coats can cause problems just as much as they can prevent vegetable matter and dirt from getting into the fleece. The Jacob fleeces with which I've worked have been pretty clean and easy to clean, so I haven't noticed them not being jacketed as a drawback at all. Jacob's fleece takes color quite readily, so if you're interested in dyeing experiments, this can also be a good choice. The fiber tends to be matte, not incredibly lustrous, but you can get some interesting color gradations and depth of color if you blend some of the darker fiber in with the lighter, and you can get a heathered look to your dyed yarn or fiber. There are lots of different techniques that you can try. Certainly not the only fleece I could recommend for a beginner, but it's the one I wanted to mention here. I hope you found this episode useful and informative. Maybe it's inspired you with even more questions, and if so, I hope you will ask them on the Ravelry threads. If you are visiting Rhinebeck, you should find Emily, Claire, Sarah, and I shopping for a fleece on Saturday morning. Come find us. Come say hi. You could meet us at the podcaster meetup on Saturday afternoon at 1. And you can look forward to learning more about our fleece purchase and our own processing methods as we begin part 2 of this series later on this year.
Acorns jumping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, furry as a mouse. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a mighty fine, mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine, mighty fine nature thing. Leaves lay down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a sweet nature, sweet nature thing. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow.
Thanks for listening. Music for this episode is Sweet. Song and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Bovine Social Club. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing. It's a fine nature thing. It's a suey nature, a suey nature thing. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine. Sweet nature, a sweet nature thing.